She's a business mogul.
Number one.
And wellness expert.
How can I help?
And now Chantel Ray and her amazing guests are here to guide you on your wellness journey.
Time to level up.
Welcome to the Waste Away Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to today's episode. And I am here with one of my absolute favorite people ever. His name's Matt Saunders, and I love him because he can really go deep really fast. Me and my husband go out to dinner with his wife a lot. And the four of us, anytime we go out to dinner, I just always feel sharpened. You know, the Bible says in 27:17, sharpens iron.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I really feel that way about you. I just feel like every time we get together, I always take myself to the next level. So you guys are in for a treat today.
Oh, we are. That's a big compliment. Thank you.
Well, you know, I think most of my life, I wanted to be successful. Like, that was the goal. And I was always like, you know, how do I get as much success? And how do I accomplish my goals and my dreams? And I always was like, I'll work harder than anyone. I'll wake up earlier, you know, whatever it takes to get success.
Sitting in the last hour of the office. No, I hear you. I know the thought. I was there. I did it too.
Yeah. And I realized that, you know, success on its own wasn't enough. And so I got to a place where like what I was doing wasn't like fulfilling me to the point where I felt like I was just really joyful and like just kind of in alignment with my highest self. So I just, you know, I've been doing this podcast for a long time. We have over 500 episodes. And I started realizing that top performers, that success by itself was selfish, and that just becoming successful and getting your dreams isn't enough. The people who actually empower and lift others up around them is one of the reasons of what got them successful. And that's why I'm excited that you're on today, because Matt is on here and he wants to empower you and lift you up. He has zero gain. Like, he has nothing to sell. He doesn't have anything. Like, he doesn't do coaching. He doesn't do anything. He's just like, here's an area in my life where I grew from and I kind of took myself to the next level. And now I want to empower and lift up those listening with zero gain at all and be able to just truly help people. So we're just grateful that you're here today, Matt.
Yeah, thank you. A lot of nice things you said there. That's always been my position on the podcast, is any podcast, is like, I would just share my experience. There are people who are going to be able to share experience that's way more beneficial for various people, and the opposite, not as beneficial. But to the extent that, hey, what I've gone through and what I've learned helps somebody else, I'm super happy to share.
So tell us a little bit about what your experience has been. And when you're listening to this, you know, I want people to look at it like this. I truly believe that every person kind of has a bent towards something, meaning you have a bent towards food, or you have a bent towards gambling, you have a bent towards drinking, or
you're saying
vent. Instead of going the straight and narrow,
yeah,
you're kind of just like, you're kind of bent towards this way. Like, for me,
okay,
some kind of, you know, candy or sugar or a cake, that's what would kind of, you know, get me excited and take me off the straight and narrow path kind of thing.
I gotcha. But my thinking on that is around, I thought you were saying vent. Like, this is how they deal with stress, emotion.
That's true.
With, you know, how they vent off. And I'm like, I literally am like, totally tracking with that, because we go through emotional cycles where we're not sure what we're feeling and we build a lot of stress, and then we blow that stress through, you name it. You can name it. I mean, whether it's drugs, heroin. I love it when people say drugs and alcohol. I'm like, you do know alcohol's a drug, right? It's drugs, all right? Drugs, eating, you know, the fortunate thing about people on drugs is they can hide it. People that eat for release can't hide it because you see it.
Very true.
And they're equally aren't, you know, all types of eating disorders. You know, there's so many disorders, people that cut themselves, all these types of strategies that people have. Like you're saying, it's a bent, but I see it as kind of like the way they're able to, the way they deal with that emotional thing. They have them a little process in a healthy way, and they just, it's definitely human nature. I don't know someone, I mean, I'm sure there's near perfect people that don't, right? Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about kind of your journey and what made you decide that you were going to quit drinking altogether.
That's a really long story. So let me try not to, if I go down too many directions, I'm going to just lose everybody. So let me kind of like do the bullet points and then a little bit of within there. I stopped drinking at the end of the day just because I didn't feel good most days, and I'm 56. So, I mean, like, you know, there's some realities to drinking. I didn't feel good most days. I definitely was not thinking as clearly as I thought at different points in my life when I was younger. And I began to feel, I have been feeling like just totally overwhelmed and more or less like my life's unmanageable, which on the outside would seem ridiculous because I've got some, you know, by outside things, nobody would ever know that. But at the end of the day, my peace of mind was not very high. Even though everything should be great, I felt like life's unmanageable. At the end of the day, you kind of, if you're brutally honest with yourself, you decide what's really happening. And I was drinking too many drinks, too many nights a week, and had told myself over the last, 20, 30 years, I'll only do it on the weekend. You know what I mean? Or I'll only, and I always break that 100% of the time. I mean, like I might go a month without it, but then I'm right back to the same pattern of drinking. And I just got to a point where I'm like, hey, if I drink, that's going to be the level of drinking I do, because I've already told myself 1,000 times, hey, look, I won't do it during the week or something like that. And then I do. So just accepting that, like, okay, if I'm going to engage in that behavior, I'm not willing to fool myself and say, oh, I'll only have one or two a few nights a week or so. It's not going to happen. And people don't understand the addictive nature of drugs, because they'll, like, my wife would say, well, why don't you just, you know, have two drinks? And I shrug and I'm like, that's just like stupid. Just enough to get tired. Like literally, okay, I'll feel good for 30 minutes and I'm tired. Like I can't even like process that thought. They just don't understand, like, when, you know, like, I look at someone smoking a cigarette out of their trach, and I'm like, different drugs have different addictive profiles. So I just said to myself, like, it's time to give it up. And I'm sorry I'm rambling. I am rambling.
Well, I think that, you know, when people are listening to this, I want them to put in place of whatever it is, like, if it's, you know, shopping, or whether it's smoking, or whether it's
anything.
We're talking about any destructive habit that we do to self-soothe in a disruptive way, that we're not at our highest self. That is what we need to talk about.
All right, so we're definitely on the same page. You know, you're saying bent, and now it's like I'm with you. Self-soothe in a manner that is self-destructive, net negative, however you want to put it. You're worse off for having done it, even though in the next 30 minutes after you began it, it made you feel better. after 30 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever it is, you know, there's no benefit and it's destructive. Yeah, there's a lot of that. The solution on the other side of that is going to be different for every person, you know? It really is. For me, it just had to come to the point that I'm just like, there's so many like associated good times with having drinks, meeting people out, social link up in my brains that I'm just not consciously aware of that made me not want to do that. And I just got to a point where I'm like, okay, there's nothing left as far as if I want to feel better, if I want to feel more in control of my life, if I just want to be a better husband, which I always do and I fail at. This morning I got mad at my wife. I mean, she screwed something up, but I mean, reacting negatively is that's just not okay. So anyhow, I'm with you. I don't know the solution for all those things, but when it comes to drinking, I can tell you, if you go like get this naked mind, it will reframe your box so you'll understand that book. I just got it on Audible. It really reframes your thinking so you can see drinking for what it actually is.
And what's the name of the book?
This Naked Mind.
Okay. And what did you get at? What were kind of the key takeaways that you got out of it?
Oh, it's excellent. So it basically is a book that takes every possible subconscious association you have with drinking and then says, let's look at this in a conscious way and evaluate if it's true or not true. Mm. And so that's what's so cool about the book. It's like,
well, can you take some of those things?
Oh yeah,
and
sure.
Relate them to eating. So if someone's listening to this, we can do it for drinking and eating both. Give some practical examples that she gives that we can actually look at that and go, okay, this is what I'm hoping for, but this is what it's actually going to get me.
Okay. I might be making some stretches, but at least in this Naked Mind, some of the top things that come to mind really is like the association with drinking and it necessary for a party so that people have fun. And I don't know if that goes the same with eating though, right? No, because eating's kind of, like, I think it might be a stretch.
Would you just talk about it with drinking? I will associate it with eating. So okay. We'll balance each other with that.
Okay. So when it comes to like alcohol, for instance, is it the company you're enjoying or the alcohol itself? And it's usually the company. And then the next thing is like the first 10 minutes without drinking might be a little uncomfortable or 5 minutes. But if you really look at various events, you'll find people start to interact and have fun in the absence of alcohol. It's been a while, so I guess this really isn't a good organized podcast on my part. I'm sorry. It's going to be hard to follow. I'm flipping up the book just to see if there's any bullet points. But that book, you asked me about it, and now as I'm thinking about it, it's been a hot minute since I read it and listened to it, This Naked Mind right here. Let me hear it. I drink to relieve. Oh, this is a great one. This does tie totally into what you said. I drink to relieve stress and anxiety. With alcohol specifically, yeah, that helps you for the next 30 minutes to 2 hours, 3 hours. But all of the science she goes through undeniably proving that it increases your stress and anxiety the following day, week, month. So when you drink, hey, I've got a level of 10 stress right now. I drink. Tomorrow, I'll have 11 on a scale of 1 to 10. Like, you, it just increases stress and anxiety by itself, by itself. And, oh, so many cool points about it, too, is like, see, I think there's a difference between eating and addictive drugs, because a lot of people are like, I just need that one or two drinks to feel better after work. Well, what they're actually experiencing is the withdrawal effects of alcohol if you have it each day. So here.
Well, you have the same thing with sugar, though. If you think about sugar, you have sugar withdrawals with that. And because of the highs and the lows, the same exact thing happens with sugar. And they say that sugar is as addictive as cocaine. I mean, so they
have
studies with that over and over again. So I think that relating sugar and having, you know, talking about drinking or drugs, that is the same thing. So I think we can relate it.
Yeah. So the withdrawal effects, exactly. Often people think this helps me, but it's not that it helps you. It's that if it wasn't in your life, you wouldn't have the withdrawal effects. You'd be fine. Now that it's a regular part of your life, when you go without it, you feel terrible. And yeah. Saying, that was just one point in the book. There's so many good.
Well, I think one of the things.
I mean, even sex, like, you know, you're not going to be more attractive to the opposite sex. Well, I laugh. I mean, she goes through all the points talking about it. And even, you know, making love with your spouse. Again, she goes through all that and shows you, like, it's much better with no alcohol on both parts.
Did you guys know that 97% of Americans are deficient in at least one mineral? It's true. You need more than a dozen minerals for your body to function at its best, but with the standard American diet, it's almost impossible. So here's where Beam Minerals comes in. Guess what? All you have to do, take one little shot of this one, one little shot of this one, and guess what? It looks like this, but it tastes like water. Take one shot, and boom, in 30 seconds a day, you're getting an entire thing of minerals instead of an entire cabinet of supplement bottles. So with Beam Minerals, we make mineral balance simple. Well, I want to talk about this because one of the things that, you know, people say is moderation, right? We've all tried it where someone says either like you, what you just said, I'll just drink on the weekends or I'll only have two glasses of wine. And then the problem is that your goal is to do moderation. But then what will happen is if you have just one, then I won't have to say no to my friends. You know, I won't have to wake up with a hangover. I won't have to worry about drinking too much. It's all great ideas. The problem is that moderation fails. And so you go into the idea with having moderation. And so that's what happens, in my opinion, sometimes with even people with sugar, is that they'll say, okay, I'm just going to have one of these brownies. And then before they know it, they're having 10 brownies.
You're on my favorite topic. Okay, so let me hone in on this topic. And this is, like, I think has a tremendous benefit to a lot of people once they really get it and will be honest with themselves. Okay, big picture, let's say we got 100 drugs and we have 100 people. If we're testing each person's capacity to become addicted to that drug, out of those 100 people, everyone's going to be at a different part on the chart. And what I mean by that is, like, I smoked cigarettes my senior year of high school, a pack a day. Graduation day, I'm on the beach, or day after graduation day, and I'm like, hey, I'm 18, I'm out of high school. This is a no-go habit. Like, you know, I was just doing it, but this is going to really cause me a tremendous amount of health problems. Just stopped it. My proclivity to addiction to nicotine is such that I can just stop it. Whereas you see people who literally are smoking out of their trach because their proclivity to addiction on nicotine is so strong, it's ridiculous. So, circling back to exactly what you're talking about, once you're honest with yourself and you're like, hey, I've said to myself, I'm only going to have 2 drinks on 2 different nights in the week and that's it, and it's never worked, that's when you got to say to yourself, hey, look, my proclivity to addiction is at this level. And given how addictions work with various chemicals, sugar, whatever it is, there is no such thing as me going back to this lower level.
So
there, it just doesn't exist. You can go 2, 3, 4 years, and that same person that was a chain smoker does 1 cigarette, and a month later, they're back to two packs a day. And so to your point, understanding there is a spectrum of addiction that each individual has for each drug, and acknowledging where you are on that spectrum and saying, hey, I've tried 100 times to do it in moderation and it always ends up here. Just giving up and saying, that's a fact. I'm not going to fool myself. I'll be brutally honest. So I have 2 choices. Zero of that going into my body, or that. But this whole place is a lie. It's zero or it's this level. Everything in between there is a total lie. And if you're willing to lie to yourself, lie to yourself. But I'd rather you just be like, hey, it's this or it's that. And the hard thing about drinking, and probably food too, is people are like, oh, just have one. I mean, you know, it's one. And they're not evil. They're just literally like, oh, just try one, you know? And so you just have to go like very gently, you don't want to make a point of it, just say like, oh, not tonight. I got something going on tomorrow, or I just ate a lot. If it's sugar, I think I'm puke if I have anything more. Because it's just a weird conversation if you're like, no, because then psychologically they're like, well, I'm eating this cookie, like you're better than me. Like at some weird psychological level, you're higher, holding yourself to a different standard that it's better than them, and it makes it really weird. So it's just best to just be like, wow, whatever you want to say, just
yeah. I want to really hone in what you just said about moderation, because one of the things that we do is we do things because we perceive it will be a benefit to us, right? Like we don't ever say, I'm going to do this because it's going to completely ruin my day. Or, you know, I always want to do this because it's going to make me horrible. It's like, no, we do things because we believe it's going to make us better, live better, be better.
Feel better. We'll go back to shoot. It's really shoot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You're like, okay. Yeah, screw it. I'll have that drink and then I'll have another one. And yeah, you're having fun for the next hour or two. Or like, screw it. That dessert looks great. I'll have it. That makes it. You're like, boom, boom, boom. And then, you know, 2 hours later, you're like, oh my God. So it's a very like, just that short term. It's like taking something because you're in pain, at some level of pain, and you're like, hey, I'll get 30. That'll make me feel better. Okay. It's that short-sightedness. You know what I mean? Where you're 2 inches up.
We drink because we think that the alcohol or the sugar or the food provides some kind of benefit. So like in your mind or someone's mind, they could say, well, this drink is the only way I'm going to relax after a long day at work. Or connect with those around me. Or it makes me more fun. Or it makes me express my feelings. Whatever it is.
Yes. And I have nothing against drinking. I mean, like my wife, you know, she doesn't drink much. You know, I mean, she'll have, you know, a glass or two of wine. She doesn't have the habit where it's going to be like, oh, I'm drinking 4+ nights a week, 4+ drinks. So I don't have a problem. And just like you don't have a problem with sugar, if I have a cake in front, you know, eat a cookie. But to you, you're like, if I have a cookie, I'm going to eat 12 of them. Or I'm assuming that's your weakness. You said sugar.
Yeah. For me,
alcohol to you is nothing. You're like, yeah, it was okay, but I don't really like it.
I'm just not, I've never been a big drinker ever. I probably drink now maybe 2 to 4 times a year. And it's never been my bent, right? It's never been my go-to.
How are you there? Yeah.
Definitely my sugar for me is it. And I still have to catch myself after I've had a bad day. I start going through some different things, like whether it's sugar or whether it's like too much carbs or something. In my mind, I say, well, having this food is a way that I'm going to relax because I had a horrible day, or this is going to make it fun. We're all going to get yogurt after whatever.
Yes, yes. You know, I get it. Yeah. And so I think with alcohol, it's easier in the regard that you don't need to drink alcohol. But with food, depending on the types of food, you need to have food.
But you can give up sugar. But the one thing is that you can live 100%, where if when you start eating sugar, you realize I'm eating more sugar, more sugar, more sugar, more sugar. And I've tried to do this in moderation over and over and over again. I've tried to do that and it does not work. Then what this episode, I really want to kind of get people on board that says, like, I'm not going to try to tell you that moderation is wrong or that no one can successfully do it. That's not true. I'm thinking in my mind, like, I love people who live in moderation and can do things in moderation. But there's times where you have to, like my mom says, know thyself. And if you've tried moderation and tried moderation and tried moderation, and you might have to get to the place where you go, okay, we're not going to moderate anymore. We have to just say, I'm wiping my hands of this. This has to end.
And that's exactly right. Just the fact that, like, to you, it would be sugar, but to me, it's alcohol. Okay. But the people around me, you know, they may be able to have a couple drinks and be good. And the people around you might be able to have a couple, you know, amazing looking desserts and be good. So you just have to be honest with yourself is really what is the reality of it. And just realize other people may or may not understand that that's your bad stuff. I think one of the things that came up but blurted out though, when you were talking about, like, you got to get to a point to be zero, or this is where I'm going to be with that food or drug. I think a really important point about that is looking at people that have done it. Like my friend Scott, you know Scott Jelinek, he went on the no carb thing years ago, and for like 2 or 3 years did no carbs. When I say carbs, you're talking like breads. You know, he still drank alcohol, which is a carb, but no breads. And then he ran the 4-hour body. Remember how that went around?
Yeah.
And where the 4-hour body's like, give yourself one cheat day a week on whatever program you're on. Over. As soon as he went back, and he's like, for years I didn't. And then I bought that stupid book and it said, give yourself one cheat day a week. And it was over. And it's just like, you know, it's a real life example. What you said, he went years with eating zero breads, you know, any carbs were in the form of you know, vegetables or whatever, fruit, whatever. And to your point, they're still in there like years. And then one cheat day, it's over. And that was 5 years ago, and he's still eating, you know.
Guys, I just want to interrupt for just a second, and I want you to hear Paul Saladino talk about why liver is so important. And if you don't like liver, we have another option for you.
Your ancestors were eating liver. And the reason that this sort of wisdom has been passed down is because liver is very nutritious. It's basically nature's multivitamin. If you look at the nutrients in meat, they're great. You've got zinc, you got B6, you got B12, you got some K2. But if you look at liver, it really complements what's in muscle meat. And there are many unique nutrients found in organs, specifically liver as a powerhouse of these, that are difficult to obtain outside of liver. Like meat and organs are like peanut butter and jelly. They just go together. They're supposed to be eaten together. The easiest way to eat liver is just to do it raw. If you don't want to eat liver raw, you can cook it. But the reason that I like to do it raw is because there are unique nutrients in liver that are probably somewhat degraded when you cook the liver.
This really is like the most nutrient-rich supplements that you can find. And they are amazing. I have tried them. I absolutely love them. So just go to heartandsoil.co, use the coupon code Chantal Ray, and save some money there.
So, well, let's talk about mindset for a second, because I think one of the things that really holds people back, whether it comes to food or alcohol, is that we think a life that has no sugar or a life of sobriety looks pretty miserable.
Yeah.
And again, we believe that either the sugar or the alcohol provides some kind of benefit. Like, you're in your mind, you're like, well, if I'm going to go to the party, I'm either going to be eating sugar or I'm going to be eating alcohol. And so if I don't do that, then my life is going to be miserable. And so when you change that mindset and you go, no, my life is not going to be miserable. There's lots of people who don't have alcohol and don't have any sugar in their life, and they're 20 times happier.
Well, so to your point, the most challenging part of that equation is somehow, however you do it, understanding every subconscious association. And that's why this Naked Mind was so beneficial. It's really a deep dive into all of those, and then taking a truthful look at it, meaning like really truthful, like consider, it does this, but consider all this. And so, because we can make a decision and say, like, I'm not going to have any more sugar just because my belt doesn't look good. You know, my stomach, I want it to look better, whatever it is. And it's not going to help, you know, it that's the value of that. But if you go and you start to really understand all the things going on behind the scene in the subconscious and can list those out and look at them, I think it'll be a little more powerful, or a lot more powerful, tremendously so. And that way you can start understanding all these cues, because you get so many cues when it comes to well, with alcohol, it's ridiculous. Subconsciously, you're talking social media, your friends are out, you know, this is a coffee cup, but it's a cocktail, like, oh, living life, you know, like, I challenge you to watch TV tonight, or go on the internet tonight, or turn on the radio, and look at how much drinking is everywhere, and it's associated with fun, friends, sex, beautiful place. I mean, and consciously, you know, that's not true, but subconsciously that's working. So to your point, you're like, well, hey, I'm going to quit sugar. And you haven't even considered all these subconscious associations you have with it, which, by the way, are hard to uncover because they are subconscious.
I want to talk about decision fatigue for just a second, because, you know, one of the things that I talk about all the time with my staff is I can't have decision fatigue. And what I mean by that is, like, if my assistant came to me and I said, hey, I need to order pens. And she says, okay, well, do you want red pens or blue pens? And then I'd be like, red pens. And then I'd be like, okay, well, do you want ballpoint or do you want felt tip? And it's like, okay, I want felt tip. It's like, no, every one of these decisions creates decision fatigue. Like, pick a pen, buy it. I just need a pen.
I can't agree with you more. I love that term. Cause like, for the purpose of, like, let's just say that, let's pretend you can do 100 decisions and then you're going to be fatigued for the rest of the day. You want them to be on pen color? You know what I mean? Like, and I'm guilty of that. Like, and to a T, I'm a little bit like you, is that I'll crack out over little details and then I don't blame them. They're like, well, when I ordered the pens that were like this, you wanted the ones that were like that. And so You get what I'm saying.
I do know what you're
And I
saying,
know
but
you
you have
well
to get
enough.
to a point where like you have to limit. Like I got to a place one at one point where my, assistant was just ordering me lunch and they knew I had seven different places. And that was again one less decision that I needed to make. Either, I didn't have to make that decision. But what I'm saying is when you make the decision that you are not going to have alcohol, because what happens is if you think about it, you'd have to go out that night and go, okay, well, it's a Friday night. Tonight I'll have three drinks, or like it's a Wednesday night. Oh, I'll just have two drinks. And then you can actually start getting all these different decision making. And then you're like, well, when is too much? And should I have the next drink? Or how many should I have tonight? All of that starts to get very tiresome. And so when you make the decision to go, I'm not having alcohol, period, or I'm not having sugar, period, it actually starts to allow you to enjoy life. And that single decision can help you just feel more free. And the exhaustion of just constantly wondering if moderation's even possible that night. Don't you kind of think that?
Well, I agree with you. It's different words that we use just because we have different ways of understanding things. But I always used to say when I would go, and I've gone tons of times, like I'm not going to drink for a month. And many times, or a couple times, I said I'm not going to drink for a year. And 3 or 4 months later, I drink. But in those times, I always say it's amazing how much mental real estate, different way of saying decision fatigue, is in my head around drinking. Because it might be like, hey, I'm feeling kind of stressed out. It's Wednesday, half time in the week. Let me call Scott or Mike or Jeff and see if they want to meet and get a glass of wine on, on the boat or do whatever. So I'm trying to set up events for my addiction constantly. Because I don't generally, I never would, I won't say never, but generally I'm not going to drink without company. But so anyhow, there's this constant mental real estate taken up, like you're saying, decisions being made, like trying to appease your addiction. Yeah, I agree. So it's very freeing. It's super freeing. The other thing I noticed this time, which is kind of cool, is everything I associate with how I was feeling, which I was feeling run down, hard to think, doubting my capacity to perform in business, all these things. I just don't want that life anymore. So it got to where I really became and associated drinking with that life, like how I felt. Which was basically out of control, and my future grim because it's not going to get better. Like, how I feel is not going to get better. It wasn't like I woke up and for the last 60 days I felt this way. This has been like for 5 plus years, like, what's wrong with me? So I'm working out more, I'm eating healthier, like, I'm doing everything to avoid the reality that this one thing is probably it. And then when you listen to like Huberman, he has a great podcast. I'll send that to you. The Huberman Lab, that really goes over the reality of alcohol, which nobody wants to listen to unless they're gonna quit because it's poison. I mean, it's like literally saying, they're like, okay, you can have one cigarette a day, it's fine. Nobody's gonna say that. A drink, like when you really understand alcohol, you realize like it's like a drink's like a cigarette. Like, not good for you. Not even one. 100% lies in the media. All funded by a $1 billion a day industry. Yeah, if you read anything that says alcohol has any health benefit for you, it's funded by the industry. There is no researcher on that top subject that will say there is a single benefit to alcohol properly evaluated. And it's a car. Anyhow, I'm on my rant. I'll get off of that.
Well, I want to talk about the numbing piece of it, because I believe alcohol and sugar both, it can actually numb your pleasure response. And what I mean by that is that, you know, things that maybe used to have pleasure to you, like whatever it is, like if you went to play tennis or you went and played poker or whatever you did that was fun, you know, either eating too much or drinking too much, what happened is that you start thinking that the only thing that can make you happy is when you're drinking too much or when you're eating this kind of sugar. And you're also numbing yourself to the point that you're numbing, you know, any of your feelings. And one of my friends, Kristen, she's a counselor, and we go, she lives in my neighborhood and we go for walks. And she always says, you have to sit with unease to prevent disease. And what she means by that is when you get sad and when you get upset about something, you have to be able to sit and not numb it with the alcohol or the sugar in order to be able to prevent yourself from getting a disease, which is either overeating or overdrinking or whatever. So what kind of self-talk have you done with yourself to kind of go, okay, I'm not going to drink anymore. This is a decision I made when, because inevitably there's going to be, you know, the devil's going to come in and say, well, this is a huge party. You haven't seen these people in a long time. And you really, this is the one time you can, it'll be fine if you only drink a couple times a year or whatever it is. What is the self-talk you're giving yourself to talk yourself out of that and falling off the ledge?
Well, that's a good question. I love that saying that you just said, Christian says, you have to sit with unease if you don't want disease. I love that, really, because I think that's the nature of addiction, whatever it is that, hey, we don't feel good right now. We're uneasy for whatever the reasons. And if I have this, I'll feel better. I think that's fundamentally where it really starts. You know what I mean? I'll fit in more. I feel uneasy. Yeah, that sounds good. Let me try that. You know, let me have that. I think that's so. I'm not sure if I've got like, hey, here's some great self-talk as much as like, I think there's a lot of personal growth in just remembering that one thing, which is, hey, it's okay to feel uneasy. This is my body telling me like something. It's okay. I might not feel okay, but it's okay to not feel okay. So let me just do, I don't have the solution. I mean, I don't have the perfect self-talk for you. I'm just saying, I think realizing it's okay to feel uneasy, it's part of being human, and we don't need to reach for a substance to feel better. And I think this is where, and this is where I want to become. I want to become where I'm like, okay, I'm uneasy. Let me actually have a little place I can go to in my mind, close my eyes, breathe a few times, and get grounded again. Because once you're grounded again, it's easy. You know, but you're going to have those moments of weaknesses. But I don't have any like perfect self-talk technique, but I think what you're talking about is pretty golden, because you need to kind of like feel it. And usually if you really peel back the onion, when you're not feeling good, I'm not talking about sick, like you're feeling uneasy, at the core of that is two things. Core, meaning like peel the onion. You're either feeling like you could be hurt, or you're going to get hurt, or you are hurt, or you're scared, fear. That's usually at the core of anything making you feel uneasy. Is there some potential that you're sensing for being hurt, or there's some potential that you actually fear? And from that uneasiness, you then like, oh, this will make me feel better. So I think just sitting in that and kind of maybe even asking yourself, what am I really feeling? Like, I'll give you a great example of this is like, my wife will do something and I'll say to myself, okay, what am I feeling? And I'll say, I'm feeling. And I'm like, nope, that's my reaction. What am I actually feeling? And it'll take a few minutes. It's not like bing. And then I'm like, oh, I'm hurt. I'm hurt. I'm like really hurt. I feel like unloved. And so I'll just say, now I can approach her and say, listen, I actually feel hurt. I feel hurt because when you said this, this is like how I felt. Like, this is like why I felt that way. In the spirit, when you can actually get in touch with what you're feeling, like peel that onion, it changes entirely because the spirit with which I can talk to her is no longer. That was my reaction to feeling hurt. So there's no turning. It doesn't matter what I say to her, the spirit with which I am generating at that moment is, there's no way. I could say the sweetest words in the world and they're still not sweet, you know? So going to your whole question, I don't have like that perfect solution as much as it's okay to feel uneasy. Finding some routine that you can get back to grounded, I think is pretty golden. And then, hey, if you make a mistake, the biggest thing about making a mistake is don't beat yourself up. You made a mistake. Don't say like, oh, I'm such an idiot. Like, I can talk about what not to say with self-talk. Never say anything with self-talk that you wouldn't say to like your four-year-old niece. You know, someone that's like, or your four-year-old, you know, someone that's just like this perfect little person, you know, never talk to yourself in anything you wouldn't say to them, you know. So you make a mistake, you ate a brownie, then you ate 10 more. Okay, you made a mistake. You're human. You're going to make mistakes. Tomorrow's a new day. I'm not going to let this mistake be something that I am defining myself by.
Yeah. You
know, so normal to just be, God, I'm such an idiot. Why did I do that? I don't want to do that. It's just human nature, but being kind to yourself is, you know, a little bit where it's at.
I believe that our mind and our emotions can be extremely complicated, and we weren't taught as kids how to manage them and navigate them and really understand them. And so what we do to self-soothe is we do it in destructive ways, and that brings us not to our highest self. And so if we want to get to a place where we go, okay, I don't want to be distracted internally, mentally, emotionally. I want to stop making poor decisions. And I think part of it is knowing what your mission is in life. And, you know, part of my mission is to, I would love to have like, I have kind of big goals, but I love to be able to like serve 100 million lives and help them improve their quality of life with their health, their wealth, and wisdom. So I love helping people with their health. I love helping people build wealth, and I love for them to get godly wisdom. And so if I kind of, okay.
That's an awesome mission. Health,
yeah, if that's my mission, then I need to start making some changes in my life to go, am I at my highest health? How can I, what am I doing to get to my highest health? What am I doing to get to the wealth that I want to be at, and my godly wisdom and my relationship with God that is the closest that it can be? And so I make decisions and I go in that direction and I say, does every decision I make serve that mission? And when you have like a sentence where you can make, this is my mission, this is what I want to do, you know, then you can become kind of your highest self. But I think a lot of people don't really know what their mission or their season is right now. And so
I'm
think,
guilty of what you just said, and I agree totally. And I've had it on my list to sit down. I even have the exercises to do it because I'm at the half point in my life. I mean, I'm 56. you know, I mean, anything that drove me, money used to be the business success used to be kind of like the unifying factor that everything fell in line with. And I mean, God was always in my life, but if I looked at, like, you know, I don't think we're too different in terms of business success being a unifying factor everything lines up with. But at 56, that doesn't do it for me. It just doesn't do it for me. Like, that is not enough of a driving force anymore. So when you have something like helping as many people as possible in terms of their development with health, wealth, and wisdom, that's a great, as long as that's really you. You know what I mean? As long as you can really buy into that, not buy into it, but that be you. So yeah, I've had that on my list, and I haven't sat down the 8 hours in a locked room with no distractions to really write it all out and figure it out for myself.
Did you guys know that your thyroid's main food is iodine? And guess what? Mercury and other toxins gobble up your selenium, and your thyroid glands need selenium to convert iodine to thyroxine. So if you have mercury fillings, and with all the toxins and mold, your selenium just gets gobbled up. So here's the bottom line. I take something called Peak Thyroid. It's got iodine, it's got copper, and it's got selenium. Everything you need to get your thyroid back to functioning without medicine. So go to ChantelRayWay.com/upgraded formulas. Use the coupon code ChantelRay to get a huge discount.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, people can get kind of like in an unconscious state up for so long about being successful. Like, they have this idea of being successful, and it's, you know, like I said, to either prove others wrong, or so that you can look good, or so you can be right, or so you can be acknowledged, or whatever that is.
Right.
And sometimes you have to go to like an ego death, where like you're just eliminating your ego because you're not fulfilled internally. And so if you can get a big mission and figure out, and I would love to sit down with you and help you figure out what your goal is. And we can do that for each other as well. But when you get that big mission of what you want to do, I think it just really helps you make better decisions of where you want to be. And
well, it helps. I mean, this podcast is kind of like a big picture now, but I agree entirely, is that once you have a mission that really means something to you, that's bigger than you and helps others, it's fun to get out of bed and go. Like, I can retire. Like, that's not even like a remote issue. Like, it won't impact my life. Like, no aspect, like zero. But that literally sounds horrible to me. I mean, like, okay, God gave me all these gifts, and I'm going to go, for lack of a better word, be utterly useless to society other than my own self-pleasurement. I just think it sounds horrible.
Well, let me say, I don't know if you've heard of a guy, one of my friends, Rory Vaden. He always says you're perfectly positioned to help the person you once were before. So if you are struggling
right.
with alcohol, then you are the perfect person to help someone to overcome that. And so for you going, well, okay,
yeah,
if I help someone, if I just lost 30 pounds, then I'm able to help someone else. I'm perfectly positioned to help someone else in that same pain at their season of life. So figuring out how you could do that would be a great, great thing.
Yeah, there's a number of areas really that that could tie into. You know, earlier in my life, like you started a business, and that was a lot of fun and a lot of passion that may or may not still be an area of passion. I used to love entrepreneurialism and be passionate about it, but I found lately it doesn't ring my bell as much. So like helping younger people, I do actually enjoy working with younger entrepreneurs. Younger, I don't necessarily mean age. I mean new to business. They think they have a business. They really have self-employment with an employee or two. I enjoy helping them like for free. I would do that all day long for free. Not all day long, but you get the idea. I enjoy helping people through marriage issues to an extent, particularly men. Well, no, I enjoy a little bit with the women, but I can speak mostly from experience. Because I mean, I've been married now. Is it April? Oh God, I think 28 years. And
well, you should know, Matt. You better not let your wife hear that section. We'll edit that out so she doesn't hear it.
I told her, look, it's a life sentence. Why am I going to count?
Oh my God.
Point
gosh.
Is like our it's not been easy. So a lot of the things that I've worked through. I just feel like at the end of the day, when a marriage doesn't work out, that kind of like, I know this sounds a little weird, that like Satan won.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some marriages that should divorce. I'm not saying that's not the case, but a lot of them are very avoidable. And you know, granted, intervention should have happened 10 years ago, and now they're just, but yeah. So I enjoy that when I can help, especially on that young side when it's not, relatively speaking, too late. Yeah, on the alcohol thing, I don't know if I'm the best example, because like if I was like had a wrecked life and then turned it around not drinking, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, I can help people that are, or that they're not the shoes I'm in, because I never got to where it was like a wrecked life and like, you know.
Right, but here's the thing. It that's kind of like saying, you know, okay, I lost 30 pounds. Well, I never was 100 pounds overweight. So it's
yeah, you're
kind of
helping
the same
a general
thing.
Person like you, but if someone's like 400 pounds overweight,
they're in a different mindset. I'm not going to be able to help them.
Yes.
So you can help people who were, you know, drinking. They hadn't, it wasn't like tearing apart their life, but they knew they weren't feeling great. They had some slight, you know, things that they just weren't happy with.
It's
but
hard
it
to
wasn't like they
identify
weren't still
when it's
working.
Like that. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It is. It's really hard, I think, because we tend to not be honest with ourselves when it comes to addiction. I mean, it's so funny. I mean, like, it's not funny, it's actually sad. But like, you'll hear people literally say things and you're like, that's so untrue. Like, they're like, oh, I only have two drinks. Yeah, I almost never have more than two drinks, or it's just ridiculous. And you're like, what are you saying? I just saw you 3 nights ago, almost drank a fifth. Like, how can you even murmur that shit? And they believe it. And they believe it.
They believe
they
it.
They honestly believe it. When they're saying that, it's just bizarre. I can tell you, I was never like that, though. I mean, I was always brutally honest with myself.
Always. Yeah, well, I think today what I really want people to really get to is that when we change our thoughts, we change our experience, and no matter what journey you're on, changing your thinking about alcohol, changing your thinking about sugar is the key to changing your drinking or eating behavior.
No
and
question.
Getting to that place of figuring out if moderation, if you've tried moderation over and over and over and over again, it may be time to just nix it.
Yeah. And you got to ask what your bottom is. Like, when are you going to decide that? Like, what has to happen? How bad does it have to get? How fat do you have to get? How about, you know, whatever it is.
I don't know about you guys, but I am stressed. And if you're feeling overwhelmed this holiday season, then I get it. With all the family get-togethers, it is just a relentless source of stress. But anyway, there is something that I've got called Stress Guardian, and it's actually made by Bioptimizers, the people who make the magnesium breakthrough, which I love, love, love. But anyway, they are literally made this new product. It has 14 adaptogenic herbs, and it just regulates your stress. I just actually took some right this second, and it's awesome. If you go to stressguardian.com/wasteaway and put in waste away for 10% off your first order, it's stressguardian.com/wasteaway. Go there now. I love it. Well, this has been awesome. I really appreciate your time on helping other people grow. And normally I ask people, tell people where they can find you and follow you. But Matt is like, don't find me. Don't follow me.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's been awesome. And like I said, one of the things that he's just so passionate about, he truly just wants to help people without anything. Like there's nothing that he wants from you. He truly just wants to empower you, to lift you up, and to be your best self. So you guys stay tuned. We've got another episode coming up in just a few. Bye-bye for now.
See you, Chantel. Okay, bye.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, it would mean the world to us for you to leave a review on iTunes to get this podcast out to others that may have the same questions that you do. And as always, if you have a question that you want answered, email those to questions@chantelrayway.com. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.